Thank you, Bob. I appreciate it. I'm not Brian, as you can tell, but this is a study that our lab at Auburn, I'm in a force engineering lab at Auburn University. We're with the Forest Service, so it's a federal lab. And we started a project or collaborated on a project that is trying to look at the impact of typical forest operation on soils. But instead of doing the typical thing that you do in our field, go out, take bulk density cores, measure water conductivity, we decided that we would adapt some of the newer techniques in regards to measuring stresses and relate that to compaction by using a number of or by using a some AgTech sensors that we saw published about 15 years ago. So this is how we've adapted that to evaluate compaction. So in forestry, especially from a harvesting perspective, what you are concerned about is the machine you have on the soil. How much compaction is it going to be apply on the field? We might want to have some way to minimize that. Usually we use something like slash or something. That's the cut branches or whatever that's on the ground. We can use that to run over the machine. Sometimes they use felled logs to transport the machines. And then we're concerned about the number of passes that occur in an area and how that relates to soil compaction. So this is trying to bring in all three of those elements into the study. So typically what you have is you have the typical method, conventional method, as I said, is let's go out and collect a bunch of soil and see what happened to the site. If you're lucky, you can actually get a hold of the company and have them, because a lot of this is company land, you can actually go out before they do the harvesting and get some pre-harvest data, but that's difficult to come by a lot of times. They don't really know, they don't have set schedules, and they usually go out whenever they get an opportunity. But what we wanted to do was try and relate that back to this AgTech sensor. So we're applying the sensor, and we're looking at the soil data so that we can see if this will help us do these kind of measurements a lot quicker in the field. And you can see from the picture here, here's a part of the sensor is a bulb attached to a hydraulic hose, and then is it? And we're going to compare that with the, or not in this paper, but in another paper, they compared to the results from the soil sampling. So the genesis of this was that we saw a paper back in 2001, 2002 by Reed Turner and Randy Raper, who were looking at different ways, different sensors to put in the ground. And Dr. Turner turned up with a rather, I'd say, not a very complex one, easy to assemble, easy to install. And here we are in our first attempt to install. We've gone out to a site that's, but we're skidding with the big machines. We're putting the bulbs in the ground here via this contraption. And that was based on what they developed up in Canada. And then we attached our first ones to just some gauges, a two-needle gauge. Told us how much pressure was exerted on the soil and then a reflection about the way the soil responded to the amount of pressure on the site. I skipped this part in here. We actually used a load, a pressure transducer, but we had so many wires laid out to collect the signal that it just became impossible to manage. So what we ended up with, after getting a little bit of money, was a system in which we took a pressure transducer, attached it to a data logger, and put in this box, and it's a battery operated. It's attached to this hose and to the bulb, and it's filled with water. And that's what we insert at the soil at whatever depth you decide you want to put it at. In this case, we just used about 5 inches, 13 centimeters depth. So the question was, can these be used quickly, feasibly, and can we use them to measure the difference in terms of rubber tire machine versus a track machine. Will it lessen a soil compaction if you have bare ground or slash? And what and the number of passes? And we compared two different machines. So the study was done in at Virginia Tech. They have a research force up there very close to campus. We went to a site that was going to be harvested and used that as our experimental forest. The soils in the area, for those of you who need a soil fix here, is a Burke's Climber. It's just a silt loam, very shallow. It's very rocky and very steep in this area in Virginia. The way that we set it up was that they decided that they would have two paths, and one side would be traffic by the skidder, the other by the dozer, and they would traverse an area that was laid out lengthwise, and then have a return zone where they could come back, line up, and go ahead and run over the site again. So we have the site was prepared by removing as much log material by hand and then winching it out. No machines went on the site prior to putting in the sensors and then running the machines over the test track. And then we tested the bare versus slash. We piled slash up to a depth of 3 feet. So we laid it out in two tracks, and you can see from here that we have one track that was for the skidder, one for the dozer. These numbers refer to just the experimental unit to keep them separate. We left it bare. Every other experimental unit was left bare, and then slash was piled up on both of them. And in each of those experimental units, we had within each one, the machine ran over the entire block or experimental unit. And after the number of passes at that particular location, went in and took soil cores out for bulk density and other measurements. We did mechanical resistance and measured soil moisture. We also did saturated conductivity and other measurements there. And within each of these blocks, there was an AgTech sensor. We left the name AgTech. That's the name they coined on the in the original paper. So we left that to put us in league, or at least we could go back and relate our data back to what they found as well. So this is a picture showing the layout. You can see that it's on a 7% slope. The skidder had one path, the dozer had another, and they had a return lane where when they went down, they came back up and then lined themselves up again. So the sensor, as I said, was put in the ground at 5 inches, and then the box was laid away from the machine so that you wouldn't run over it. And then the bulb was placed at with water filled so that we were in line with the other previous studies that used water as the medium for measuring the stress or conducting it. The two machines that we use a dozer, John Deere dozer, and a skidder, which is a typical skidder for forest operations. Note that the difference in weights and in the amount of ground pressure. The skidder put quite a bit more pressure on the ground as it worked. In order to simulate a load, which just wasn't feasible to pull a trailer after the as you would do in a regular skidding operation, what we did was put weighted barrels with concrete at the back of each of them, and was trying to simulate the amount of load that you might be bringing up the hill. After each number of passes, the data was downloaded from the logger, and then it was examined for the time, noting the time that we started the experiment, looking at the peaks from the results, and then looked at what we examined was the plateaus. You might see that they're looking more at the pressure and other the other studies, but we looked at the plateau between the peaks. And as an example, this is just a small portion of the output from the data loggers from the pressure transducer. And what we zeroed in on was this change here from this level here. And as when you go ahead and run over the sensor again, you're getting a higher peak. So you can see it, you get like a step function going up with each pass. And that's what we examined for this particular paper. And this is what some of the tracks look like after a couple passes. The skidder actually created quite a bit of rutting on the site. So when we looked at the data, when I should say Brian, I give him all the credit. In looking at the data, this is after 12 passes, after all the passes. It was averaged. Now, we didn't convert this to PSIs. We're still using just the output, the electrical output from the sensors. And you can see that the amount of the you had a higher soil stress related associated with the skidder under bare conditions compared to the slash condition. So the slash worked pretty well in terms of reducing the amount of pressure on the soil. We did not see the same thing with the dozer. So it pretty much was, whether the slash was there or not, it didn't really make that big of a difference with the dozer. Remember, the dozer was a tracked vehicle. We also looked at the effect of passes on the soil stress and found that, as you would expect with the skidder, you're going to get a peak after a certain number of passes, in this case, 4. What we didn't expect was that with the dozer was that peak would reach at about 4, and it would plateau off and then peak again. And that's probably related to the size of the machine, the weight of the machine. Constantly, I don't think it's reached its maximum compaction yet, as opposed to the skidder, where it reached a maximum and then pretty much just stayed stable through the remainder of the passes. We also looking here at the dozer and skidder by whether they had slash or not. And for the skidder, the bare ground showed a high peak after about three or four passes. When it had slash on the ground, you saw that it did a fairly good job in reducing the amount of impacts on the site. With the dozer, we saw that they kind of reached a peak whether it had material on underneath the machine or not. So they're probably due, as I said, probably to the weight of the machine and the fact that it wasn't putting much ground pressure. We've seen that in other studies in forest applications, where the number of passes for a lighter machine eventually gets up to a maximum compaction, but it takes a lot longer. So in terms of effective passes and covers, this is just a summary, that there's if you have a skidder on bare ground, no protection, there's a very large change. It peaked after 4 passes and then leveled off. When you look at the effect of slash, you did get a response when slash was on the ground, but that response was not as high, and it leveled out at a much lower level. With the dozer, as I said, you see a peak, you see an increase, but it didn't really matter if there was something on the ground or not. So that people would want to take that in consideration if they're using these machines to do any kind of harvesting work or site preparation. And in conclusion, the cover was very effective and not so effective for the dozer. As you would expect with the skidder, one pass did it all. And continued, you still get a continuation, but not as high, not as significant. And then the dozer needed 4 or 5 passes to get up to its highest reading, whereas the and continued to increase. With cover, again, we saw that the slash did a great job with the skidder, and not so good with the dozer. And if you have any questions.
We do have time for questions.
I'll try to answer them, but.
Well, what's the pressure hose buried at the depth again?
Say, I'm sorry?
What did you, the pressure hose, you had it to depth of 6 10?
Oh, and the bulb was put at 13 centimeters for this.
13.
We did a preliminary where we buried the bulbs at various depths and found that, as you would expect, that the surface one was the most effective in giving us data. If you bury things any shallower, the machines can sometimes rip them up. So, and that was a very wet site. It was done in the spring around March or April.
And how long did you go on before you went in between the period of burying them and your study application?
You mean when we put them out and when the machine ran over them? That day.
Yeah,
I mean, we had a bunch of students out there that you can bury, you can drill them in very, very, very easily, and then let me show you this.
It looks like you used a soil core to put them in place.
I had the next slide is not coming. Oh, here it is. Okay, so you have the guide, which is this here. Here and then it you're drilling in a with an auger, you're drilling in a hole at a different angle, so that's going to put the at a certain depth, and then this PVC pipe here is cut in half. And then you put the bulb on the end, slide it in, but sometimes you have to finish cleaning out the hole in order to get the bulb all the way in. And Brian is putting the bulb now into the PVC pipe, and they're inserting it there, and then it goes right into the ground right there. And you just have to keep the box away from the machines. So it's pretty well controlled. We're trying to figure out if we can randomly put them out and maybe bury the box and not have it affected.
And how many sensors do you actually have?
Let's see. 15.
15?
They have 8, and we still have 7 at Auburn. We're getting ready to do another round of studies near Auburn, and we're looking more at the soil part of it than the sensor part of it. This was just a test run to see if it worked.
Right.
Yeah.
Have time for one more question, please.
What type of precision did you have with those various bulbs to
see what kind of? Oh, yeah. Are you talking about the depth that we put them at? I would say that there's going to be some difference because they're just off the bulbs that we ordered from online. So we want to go back and do some more, let's say, extensive testing, like how much pressure can you put on a bulb. We did that with an Instron. We got up to 100 psi in an unconfined compression test. And we're looking at the difference among bulbs right now to see if there's any difference among them so we can say that they're the same, or that we're getting the same response. But as I said, this was a trial run to see if it really worked at all, and how easy it was to put them in.
Well, thank you very much.
One question. Are you planning to make mathematical description of your data in some kind?
A mathematical description?
Modeling.
Yes. At Tech. There was another part of this where they actually did the soil measurements, and they're putting those two together in a paper. Anybody want to review it? And they're going to submit that to Transactions, and the idea would be to model it with and add in other data we're collecting now to kind of model soil texture, soil organic matter, soil moisture, and look at bulb response and see if you can actually say, under these conditions, based on this data, you shouldn't, or should you can or should not harvest in that area.
Well, thank you very much.